everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. This is episode 5, 2010. Follow us on Twitter at T-Swift Podcast. You can send requests, send fun things to us. We'll definitely retweet you. 2010 was a really interesting year for Taylor because she did a lot, but it also ended really sadly. So I guess we can get into like the fun part. The first part of the year was okay.
The first part of the year was amazing. 2010, whenever I think about it, sort of as like the entire year, like from start to finish, like if I forget about the last month, it's actually like a really fucking good year. If not my favorite year to have been a Taylor Swift fan, honestly. If I can speak my truth.
You can speak your truth. And it was very exciting because she gave us a lot of tea before the album came out and she just has never done that since.
Yeah, no, she was like very in contact with us, like starting with the live chat that she did to announce Speak Now. Let me tell you something. That is the closest that I've ever felt to her in my life. And That was it, ladies. And she hasn't been back.
Nope, she hasn't been back. And she hasn't done an album like Speak Now since. Nope. So we're still hopeful. Yeah. But let's dive right in. So January 9th, 2010, Taylor releases Fearless as the final album single. It's crazy to me that this album is like still going in 2010.
She wrung every last fucking dime that she could out of that fucking album. She toured it forever. She released the singles forever. She's talking about it forever. And you know what? It worked because the Grammys came. Ladies, they came.
The Grammys came. Yeah. But Fearless, the single, peaked at number 9 on the Hot 100, which is great given that there was like no promo.
Yeah.
The video is boring, as we know. And this is when her singles start to do better on the regular charts than they do on the country charts.
Yes, the turning point.
So we're foreshadowing her ventures into being an absolute pop legend.
Yes.
And then on January 22nd, 2010, this is going to be a contentious point for myself and Madeline, because Taylor released Today Was a Fairy Tale.
Yeah.
As part of the Valentine's Day soundtrack, and it was a smash hit, surprisingly. It debuted and peaked at number 2, higher than Love Story. It was pretty well received by critics. Someone called it her tidiest but laziest songwriting to date.
That's, you know what, I have to tell you something. Okay, let me get my thoughts straight, because I have so many negative fucking opinions about this bitch-ass fucking song. First of all, I cannot fucking believe that charted higher than Love Story. That doesn't make any sense, and frankly, the only reason it happened is because she was fucking Taylor Lautner, and that's the only reason, and the song is about Taylor Lautner. I'm literally, like, my face is hot right now. I cannot believe that song charted higher than Love Story. Second of all, laziest songwriting, I would say, is literally, like, she, like, went into her lyric notebook that she has and just, like, picked out lyrics that she had that were throwaway lyrics that she took out of other better songs and was like, oh, this works. And then she shat out a song. She literally puked it out. Like, it was her hangover song. Just like, bleh.
You are such a hater, I think. This song is good. I like this song a lot. I think it's cute. I think it's no Cold As You. It's no All Too Well. But, like, she's a cute girl. It has a great melody. And Madeline, I think, just really hates things that are fun because she also hates 22.
But that's not true, because I don't hate other songs that are fun. I just hate the ones that are shitty.
But you know what was a fun little tidbit that I found when I was researching for this is that it was blocked from number 1 by TikTok.
That is pop music and the queen saying no, goodbye to one of the shittiest songs that Taylor has ever released. TikTok said, you really fucking thought.
It was a different time when Kesha was more successful than Taylor. Yep. It was a different time. So it was also announced late in 2009 that the Fearless tour would continue to Australia, and then it announced 37 more dates in the States, which is insane that the tour went on for that long. Like, the demand for the shows, she had already completed like a full run of this tour, and she literally decided to do it again. But yeah, so Today Was a Fairy Tale is added as the encore song replacing Change, which I like, and I'm sure Madeline.
Yeah, we had a whole conversation about this last time, which I think you actually cut out of the podcast because we were fucking screaming at each other. But yeah, one of the worst things in my opinion, and it's her track record to take off you know, like a halfway, maybe not the best song. Let's be real. Not a very good song or the greatest song, but a halfway decent song and replace it with something shittier. Like, for example, when she replaced Change with Today Was a Fairy Tale, and then the Red Tour, she replaced Stay, Stay, Stay with what the fuck was it? Or did she just pull it? Did she replace it?
Yeah, she just pulled it.
She just pulled it. Okay. Well.
She pulled it. And then my beef with her is that she pulled All You Had to Do Was Stay from the 1989 tour. Now that was insane to me. That really didn't make
sense. She also pulled This Love, didn't she, at some point?
Yeah, but then sometimes she would do This Love, but she wouldn't do All You Had to Do Was Stay. And
yeah, I didn't get to see.
Really doesn't make any
sense. I didn't get to see All You Had to Do Was Stay. So that's a bummer.
Wow. Yeah. I'm so sorry for your loss. Yeah. All right. So yeah, so Taylor's touring. She's having a good time with Today Was a Fairy Tale. And January 26th, Taylor is photographed leaving John Mayer's Crossroads taping. And we have to ask ourselves, ladies, why would she be there? She wasn't involved in, you know, the production. So obviously she was there because she was dating John Mayer. Duh.
Yeah. Duh.
And then January 31st, we get a really great day. Actually, it was kind of great and it was also kind of terrible. But this is the Grammys, the 2010 Grammys.
That was that early in the fucking year? Wait a second.
So Fearless wins Album of the Year and Best Country Album, and White Horse wins Best Country Song and Best Female Vocal Performance. And we stand.
Yes, we fucking stand. That's the stuff that we stand right there.
This Grammy was so fun because Taylor at this point still was kind of the underdog. Some people looked at her as a non-serious teen musician, and she went there and she won. And she gave a cute speech and she looked amazing. That blue dress. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Classic, absolute classic. This is when she drops the Grammy because she's holding so many
it. Yeah, I forgot that shit. She fucking dropped that shit and broke it. And she was so shook. The look on her face after she dropped it was just like, it's like
she was like
she was thinking in her head, like, do I get another one?
Yeah, she was like, oh no, I hope this isn't it. Please. But she has an updo with her hair. I think that was a really good look.
Yep. That was, it stands out to me as perhaps not anymore her best Grammys outfit. But at the time, it definitely was. And for a couple years, it remained her best Grammys look, in my personal onion.
I would have the same onion as you. I would agree that this was, I would also think that this was probably her best red carpet look to date. Because she has not always been on it with the red carpets, but whoever she hired to style her for this did a good job.
Yeah, it was a good dress. It was a very good dress. It was a good updo. Good jewelry. I have no complaints. I cannot roast because it was good.
She was the youngest artist ever to win Album of the Year. Legend. But on a slightly less positive note, she performed Today Was a Fairy Tale. And Rihanna mashed up with Stevie Nicks.
I fucking couldn't tell you, like, if you were to, like, ask me, like, what's the weirdest fucking mashup you've ever heard of? That one was so weird as a mashup that it's like I my mind represses it. Like, I cannot, like, why would you do Rihanna with Today Was a Fairy Tale and You Belong With Me? Like,
doesn't make sense.
She could have done You're Not Sorry, and that at least would have been more on theme.
Yes.
She always loved to plug that song, as we remember from last time. So I don't really, she did Today Was a Fairy Tale. Like, and You Belong With Me, it doesn't add up. And on top of that, it was really, really bad.
It was really bad.
It was so bad. It's like, I don't have anything else to say about it other than, oh my God, it was cringe. It was hard to watch. And this was especially bad because, like, if you think about the fact that she won so much stuff that night against other artists like Lady Gaga, and then she went on to Beyonce, and then she went on to perform terribly. It was just the perfect, it was
just,
there's no way to sugarcoat it. Nobody could watch that and be like, oh, well, she did her best. Like, not even she did her best. She choked on a throat, a cough drop or something. And people were pissed. people were pissed the fuck off that somebody who they believed couldn't even sing. Because if I didn't know her, I would fucking think that after watching this performance.
Yeah.
She's winning all these awards. I mean, you do the math.
This performance is almost impossible to find. Taylor's team has taken off the internet.
Really? Are they eradicating it?
Yeah, it's not on YouTube. YouTube. But if you look hard enough, it's on Vimeo, which is where a lot of the stuff that Taylor's team doesn't want you to see is. But she also, like, when I was watching, I watched the performance back, and she herself in her face has no idea that it's going wrong. Like, she thinks that she's serving. She's giving the side eye. And you can see Stevie Nicks in the corner, like, slowly trying to back away from her and being like, oh my God, this is so bad. This is so bad.
She was getting out. And Taylor is like, she was just like, don't pan to me. This is all Taylor.
If you watch, she literally is. She's dressed all in black. She stands about like 5 feet behind Taylor with a tambourine. It's not good. And then Taylor's there being like, yes, queens, I'm serving. Let me tell you, Taylor, you weren't serving. You were, what's the opposite of serving? The media backlash from this is really intense. And it's the first, like, really, really negative press that Taylor gets on, like, a grand scale. And people are saying she isn't talented, she didn't deserve her award, she can't sing. Which makes sense after the performance, because she couldn't there.
What I remember the most that came out, and this is burned into my memory, is, you'll probably remember this, Zach, it was this chart that came out within the week after the Grammys happened. People were calling her a rat, by the way. I remember that. They said she had a rat face. That's aside from the point.
Yep.
They were, like, photoshopping rat faces over her face. If you can imagine what that was like.
Oh, I forgot that. That's so mean. They did do that.
But anyway, there's this chart that came out that it, like, analyzed the themes in Taylor Swift's music. And it said, like, this is how many times she mentions crying. This is how many times she mentions kissing. This is how many times she mentions boys. This is how many songs are about boys. And it was like, you know, this what's the word I'm looking for? It, like, watered down, like, all the songs that she had until it was like, oh, she writes about his boys. All she cares about is boys. She's a terrible role model for women. Like, her music isn't feminist because all she does is preach to girls about how they need to find a man and then find their Prince Charming, their Romeo. And I remember going to, like, the fucking WWF or whatever the fuck the wrestling championship is called, like, in the ring every fucking day about this chart. I was fighting Tumblr feminists every day. Yeah, it was mean. Like, at bottom line, it basically said that Taylor is vapid and stupid, and also she can't sing. So, I mean,
well, the only criticism that I will accept from the Grammys is that maybe if you hadn't heard her anywhere else, you might think that she couldn't sing. But all you have to do is go and listen to Fearless and listen to songs like 15 and hear that the message from this album is not all you need is a boy, all you need to be happy is a boy. That's really not what the bitch is trying to say.
Exactly. But, you know, people love having someone to hate. They really do. So somebody who knew only the most base things about Taylor, like, they only knew Love Story, for example, and that she did a shitty job on the Grammys, would take information like she's a feminist worst nightmare, which, by the way, is an actual headline. Google Taylor Swift is every feminist worst nightmare, and an article from 2010 will come up, bitches, and it'll have the chart in it. I know this because I was there and I fought on the front lines. But anyway, what was my point? I just got so fucking riled up. That your average person just took this information and ran with it. And this was, like, public fact about Taylor on Tumblr.com, at least, and perhaps also Twitter. I wouldn't know. That wasn't the thing back then. But, yeah, I mean, lots of people thought that she was anti-feminist, untalented, stupid, and also she looked like a rat. So you just...
The criticisms were not, like, light as well. No. They were really mean. It was like, she doesn't deserve this, she's not talented. This was like cancel culture before canceling culture existed. It was like, she's terrible, we need to end her career because she's so poisonous and awful to the world, which we all know is not fucking true. but an especially vocal critic emerges from this situation. Bob Lesbetz. Yes. I don't know how to say his name.
Who cares? He's a nobody. She killed him.
He is a nobody. He's a nobody.
He's dead.
He really is. But in my notes, I wrote a future muse of hers, which he is. He really is. I don't understand how Taylor became so aware of his particular criticism, because as far as I could figure out, he wasn't writing for any like reputable publications. He was just writing on his like personal stupid blog where he was generally misogynistic.
So I
don't get how she found that.
It might have just been the specific nature of his commentary, like the exact things that he said about her. Maybe he's like, you know what? He's a pacey old white guy. Maybe he knew Scott Swift. Maybe he's somebody from her past. I don't know. It's like, I can never wrap my brain around it, because to me, way shittier things were being said about her by people way higher up. But this was the fucking guy. This was the guy that...
Yep, this was the guy.
That haunted her so badly that she wrote a song about it. I mean, I don't have the answers.
She also ended up... This is a story for 2011, but she ended up calling him and basically being like, why do you hate me so much? And what can I do to become better?
What was his response to that? I can't remember.
He posted, like, a summary of the whole conversation that he had with her on his blog, obviously.
I forgot about that.
And he was like, I think that you should go away and listen to Joni Mitchell's album Blue. And if you think about it, that's actually...
That is foreshadowing. That is something...
That is foreshadowing. I know. I remember reading this and being like, holy shit, Taylor, like, absorbs criticism so much more than we think she does. Like, she really takes what people say about her and she, like, turns it on its head and tries to control the narrative before it gets out of control. So Taylor comes out with her own album, Red, a mere year later.
A mere year fucking later. That's insane to me. Wow. I must have forgotten about that completely. Holy shit.
And if you think about it, the writing on that album, especially for songs like All Too Well and Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, is definitely closer to Joni Mitchell's style writing than any of her other work.
That's very true.
But yeah, so we'll get into that. But the New York Times said that it was really refreshing to see someone so talented fail. And also called her, I know, but they also called her the most important artist of her generation. So we still stand.
We still stand a little bit.
But we're skeptical. We're skeptical of them. And then Bob said, if you don't think Taylor's poor vocals last night on the Grammys will end up haunting her, you don't have an internet connection. And that's like not the meanest things that he said. That's like a nice thing from him.
The way that you said Bob is absolutely killing me right now. Bob, like everything that he has to say has just been discredited just by the way that you said his fucking name. Like, he's just nothing.
Because it's true. He's nothing.
Because he wasn't anything then. He's nothing now. It's baffling to me that this.
If anything, Taylor has raised his profile by drawing so much attention to him as a person. And she talked about this constantly.
So the thing is, she did talk about it constantly. She never said, oh, it's about Bob Lefsetz, that fucking random white guy. No, he got onto his blog, got on the keyboard, and said, it's me. I know, that shit's about me. I mean, we're getting like so far ahead of ourselves, but it's
we are,
you guys,
but it's truly, as we'll get into the album, you will understand the severity of his claims. So the backlash is also so severe that everyone's favorite Scott Borchetta makes a very long statement about the vocals, saying, this is not a competition of getting up and seeing who can sing the highest note. This is about a true artist and writer and communicator. It's not about a technically perfect performance. Which, to be fair, he kind of
He went off, but it's like, it's kind of hard. I mean, I'm not saying he's wrong, but what I am saying is that my dad would say some shit like that, even if I failed. Even if I failed and the world knew it, my dad would still be like, no, it wasn't that bad. So it's like,
This is Scott Borchetta, not Scott Swift.
Oh my god, I completely okay. All right. Discredit.
I was like, what is
discredit?
For a second I was like, is Scott Borchetta her dad? And then I was like, no, he's not.
Never mind. But okay, so my point is nothing now because I have no point.
So Scott Borchetta, her label rep, obviously comes out and defends her. But I think it's perfectly acceptable to have a bad performance. Obviously, not every performance is going to be a good one, but I have to say her track record for televised performances at this time, there was not a lot to point to and say, oh, okay, she was really giving us vocals here. As we know, I have an issue with the way that she sang around this time.
Yeah.
So it's not like we could point to another performance and be like, oh, well, you know, she did really well here.
Dude,
like, what are we going
to
say?
At this time, because this specific performance happened, I would, like, go to school, and I would have my friends be like, so, Madeline, Taylor Swift cannot sing. And I remember I had this little list of videos that I would send to people that'd be like, oh, she can. None of them were necessarily televised, except for the cover of Run by George Strait. That's the only one. There's not a single award show performance. Maybe Picture to Burn at the CMTs, but even then, I don't think it's as good as ones where she's not being broadcasted live on television. I mean, that's just the tea.
There's something about live TV that really freaks her out to this day. I think that I don't think she has any really, really, really strong vocal performances on TV, except for maybe Out of the Woods at the Grammys. I thought that was
pretty
good.
Yeah, that was fun.
But other than that, I mean, even, you know, All Too Well.
That was the last time she served us a live performance at this time. I think Out of the Woods at the Grammys was one of her last. When was the last time she got in an award show and gave us a fucking performance? Hopefully she never does again, because I'm sick of it, if I'm being honest with y'all. And that's a story for another time. I don't care about it anymore.
So on February 12th, Valentine's Day comes out. The reviews are pretty slanderous. They call her ditzy and untalented.
Yeah, well, that's the review of the whole movie. Ditzy and untalented. That's the film. So I don't think she is the villain of, you know, why it's a bad movie.
No, she was a very small character in that movie. But again, I don't know how many times I have to say this. Taylor Swift is not an actress.
No,
so,
and that in particular,
what do we
is
expect?
Like, it's such a stupid little bit part. I wouldn't even consider it actual acting. She just exists. She's like, I'm going to make out with this really hot guy that's really famous right now for being in the Twilight movies. That's her part. Like, yeah, whatever. I watched it once.
And then I watched it once. I actually, you're right. I don't think I've watched it a second time. I literally watched it one time and I was really disappointed. I thought there was going to be more Taylor in this because she did push it quite hard. But I guess they knew. They were like, this bitch can't act, but we need her promo. So let's throw her a bone. She doesn't attend the premiere, and Taylor Lautner looks really sad in the promo pictures from the premiere. I know, that makes me so sad.
He's just a gentle giant. He really is.
I thought it was weird that she didn't go to the premiere, but I think she was on tour, so
yeah, she was still fucking doing Fearless, the tour, the never-ending tour.
In March 2010, early March, we get Candids of Taylor bowling with Selena, Corey Monteith, and someone else. And that's where the Corey Monteith dating rumor comes around, because she was seen hugging him.
But here's the thing of it, is that at this time, this was like the time period, 2010, I would say all the way up through Harry Styles, 2012-ish, any man that she was around, she was fucking. You know what I mean? Like, this was like, and it's bad now. We never fucking see her, so we don't really get moments like this, but
back then,
it was like every single dude, every time, everywhere she was, she's banging Corey Monteith. Now she's hanging out with the other guy from Glee, whose name, Cord Overstreet, that's his name. Now she's fucking John Mayer, and now she's banging Joe Jonas again, and now she's doing this. So she might have made out with Corey Monteith once. We will never know.
I don't think the timeline works out, because she was definitely dating John around this period. So I don't think that this was really a thing. So on April 15th and April 16th, two very important days, we get the Staples Center of the Fearless Tour. And for the first night, Taylor does charity work and she invites Katy Perry on stage to perform Hot and Cold. She is a generous queen helping a homeless person become a star.
She really was. And it's like, Katy Perry was still in that time period where she was like dressing like a fucking idiot. Not that she's she was wearing the giant bows and like the flats and the like rompers that she made herself from the thrift store.
Oh, it was horrible.
God, she looked like a fucking idiot. It really was charity work. It was. It was out of the kindness of her heart that Taylor invited her out on stage. And what did Katy ever do for her? I think we know.
Nothing. Other than steal her ex-boyfriend. That's what she did for her. She invites her out to perform Hot and Cold. This is an unremarkable performance. Katy is very excited if you go and watch the videos back. She's very excited to be there. And Taylor's just kind of like, oh, okay. Let's have fun because she's a nice person. And the next night, John Mayer comes out and he performs White Horse and Your Body is a Wonderland.
This is literally, this it goes down in history. I think about this all the fucking time. Personally, I do.
It haunts me.
It is a haunting, haunting performance. It's like, I'm closing my eyes right now, I can see it in my head. Clear as day.
I know.
Clear as fucking day.
It kind of went off. Like, their duet of White Horse was really good.
It was good.
I know we all hate him, but this was a really good performance.
You know, the weird thing is that not everybody does.
Oh yes, some people love
yeah
him. And they love Jake Gyllenhaal too,
suck him off, which I don't get. I don't understand.
I don't get that. I had a dream last night that he died. I'm being
rest
serious. I just
peace,
remember
John
that
Mayer.
I woke up,
rest in peace.
I woke up and my first Google search this morning was John Mayer dead. I thought that he died. But he's still out there. He's still doing things.
Kicking. He's still kicking.
And they tweet very nice things to each other. And he gives an interview stating how talented he thinks Taylor is. And they're definitely fucking.
Oh, 100%. Like, there's not a doubt in my fucking mind. And oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay. This might be a little bit too early to tell the story, but it's like it just came into my head and I don't want to forget. So after Speak Now came out and Dear John was released, it was kind of baffling to everybody, especially to like when you're like 15, 16, 17, I was at the time. It doesn't always occur to you like why a relationship might have been bad anyway. For example, somebody being 32 and there being a 20 or 19 year old girl. It's like that is obviously fucked. But there were all these people that were trying to like dig up information on exactly what had happened between John and Taylor that was so fucking terrible. And a couple of people had this story that they told about a housekeeper that worked at either John's house or Taylor's apartment. I cannot remember which. I think John's, honestly, because I don't know.
This is some tea.
Yeah, there's a housekeeper that worked there. And she said, like, she would, like, at one point, or maybe it was several times, she went to change the sheets, and there was blood in the sheets. Now that I'm older, my mind instantly goes to other places. But when I was 17, and it was, like, me and all the teenage girls talking about it, we were like, she lost her virginity to John Mayer. He made her do things that she didn't want to do, which is a strong, strong accusation. And also, the story has absolutely no reputable source, and it sounds a lot like something that could very easily be made up. And there's a million reasons that blood could have been in his sheets, even if it was true. I don't know. He cut his finger. We don't know. But that's a story. That's something for you to your mind to nibble on and consider.
Yeah, just chew on that, ladies. Just think about that. I mean, we're not going to address the veracity of these claims because we don't want to get in trouble. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely something horrible about this relationship, especially because of the age difference. It was so significant. He was so much older. She was so young. Like, don't you think 19's too young to be messed with?
Don't you fucking think that?
Don't you think?
You disgusting pig. Let me ask you.
Does anyone else? Does anyone else? Yeah. Around April, she does the ACM Awards where she performs Change. Again, weird. She's always pushing fucking songs that don't matter.
Honestly, I think she did Change because she knew that she could snap vocally and she knew that she fucking better do something. After what the fuck happened at the Grammys.
To be fair, this was a really good vocal performance. It's where her legendary long note
is.
The really long one.
That's the longest one to date.
Where she just Yeah, where she just holds out hallelujah for a really long time.
Yeah, it's like, wow. Yeah. That when I was first watching I snapped. It was really fucking good, but
yeah. I thought it was great. And she comes in on that little like carriage thing. She's wearing white, and then she gets into her all black. She hits the note. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
There's another backlash around this time. Yay. And it's about her surprised face. So the New York Times publishes an article saying, the jig is up. Taylor can no longer pretend to be naive and surprised.
Yeah. Back then, I thought it was fucking stupid that anybody gave a shit. And I think it's fucking stupid now. And I thought it was stupid 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Who cares if she wants to pretend to be surprised or if she really is? Like, would you rather her just go, yeah, I fucking deserve this. I knew this was going to happen.
Exactly.
I knew it, bitches.
What's the alternative? Bad
ass bitches. I knew it. Like, would you want that?
And if she'd actually done that, they would have all been like, what a precocious, horrible teenager.
Exactly. But instead, we get, oh, this little person. I was like, oh, I can't believe I won. Like, is it what? I don't know. I just
let her be surprised. Let her
pretend. Let her act. Whatever. I don't care.
And also, I don't genuinely also think that it was always surprise. I think she was just super happy. Like sometimes it's just a happy face. You know, she's like, oh my god, yay!
Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with that? She couldn't do anything right.
People were finding reasons to be mean to her.
Literally,
genuinely.
Yeah, because there were so few legitimate reasons.
And the problem with Taylor's criticisms, this is what I really hate, is that they follow her around forever. Like, they don't go away.
Yeah, you know, it's like, it's like the maybe I'm the problem meme. It's like one person says it. And people will just like run with it and run with it and run with it. And I don't necessarily see that for other artists. I don't see what's even a criticism I've heard of that another female artist. Oh, I don't know. Let's Ariana Grande maybe recently.
Cultural appropriation. Gets forgotten very quickly.
Not of the same caliber. Like something that's as stupid as she's surprised all the time.
Oh, the donut thing. The donut thing.
I mean, people thought it was funny more than they thought it was something to get mad at her about. And even then they talked about it for approximately 20 seconds. Then it was on to the next. But I still see maybe I'm the problem memes. I do not hear
all the time
a single person talk about the donut thing. And that was more recent than maybe I'm the problem.
She never gets a pass when it comes to things. It's like, okay, there was that criticism where they were like, she can't sing. And ever since, that has followed her around. Like, people say that all the time. That is a number one line of critique for people when they're coming for Taylor. Oh, she can't sing.
And I was going to bring up Lana Del Rey. When probably like her first exposed, like really high exposure performance that she had was on SNL.
Oh, the
SNL. She did bad. But nobody talks about that anymore. I never hear anybody ever say Lana Del Rey cannot sing. But that also was more recent than the Grammys performance that Taylor did. But still, people do not say Lana Del Rey cannot sing for whatever reason. I haven't even seen her on a live televised performance since then, by the way. But but Taylor has had dozens that are way better than this Grammys performance. People still say she can't sing. So in a lot of ways, like I don't really know what the foundation is for why people latch on to these things so hard. It might be because there are so few legitimate reasons to criticize her that even the smallest thing, the smallest little grain of salt, is like all anybody has. So it's like, well, let's just take it and let's just go with it for the next 20 years.
Can anyone come up with something?
Yeah, else? I would love to have a new argument with another person on Twitter. Like, I really would.
For real, I would. I love going to the mat for Taylor. Give me some new food. She wraps up the Fearless tour between April and June. That's actually a really long time frame. And she performs her first stadium show at the now iconic and overhyped Gillette Stadium. And the tour ends in Canada. Also around this time, Taylor moves into her Nashville apartment out of her parents' house, and she shoots the video for Mine in Portland, Maine.
Ah, yeah. So
this was a good time.
This was a really good time to be a Taylor Swift fan. Even like for, you know, because at this time when Speak Now was starting to come out, I kind of forgot about all the bullshit because I was getting fucking fed. Like, I mean,
oh yeah, I was getting hyped.
I was at the brewery. I was getting hyped. And it was constantly getting filled, and I was just eating the nuts and stuff all the time. So I really was. This was a good time. Oh, I love the Mine video. Let's keep going because I'm excited.
The first stadium show, though, her first stadium show being on her first tour is pretty insane. That's amazing.
Yeah, I did not put two and two together on that. It's like I've always known that, but I wasn't like, oh yeah, she played a stadium on her first headlining tour. No, that's really cool. It makes you wonder how, even in spite of all the ways that Taylor like really exposed Gloriana, they still couldn't succeed.
they still disbanded. Yeah. 50,000 people showed up to that stadium and said no thank you.
I know, I said no thank you.
But yeah, I love her Nashville apartment, can I just say as well. That is my favorite place that Taylor has. We've seen the most of it, like the interior. That's probably the place we've had the most tea from, and it's like a pirate ship, Alice in Wonderland, fairy tale. Oh, yes. I love it. I love the birdcage. I love that it's so whimsical.
Something about it, like, I don't think that any other property that she has is as strange as that apartment is. Like, I've seen as much as everybody else, by the way. I don't have any inside scoops. But the Rhode Island house is like, normal. And her parents' house, obviously, it's her parents' house. I can't speak for the New York City property because I've seen very little of that. But the Nashville house is fucking nuts. It's like she just went
off.
It's
so cool. Yeah. And it, you know what it screams to me? It has all the drapery and stuff. It really screams Speak Now Tea Party.
Yeah, exactly. It just looks like Speak Now. I wonder if she's done like any major remodeling or anything in there, because it would be a shame if she did. I think it should just be a relic of 2010.
I agree. And just like maintain it the way that it was. It speaks to how you like felt at a specific time. Like, just keep it, girl. Like, don't do anything
keep it,
to
girl.
It. But she did post pictures. She did post pictures there. I want to say 2015 or 2016. It was the first time she'd been back to the Nashville apartment in a long time. And it all looked the same. So legend. So on May 4th, she has her first Met Gala appearance. I forgot this even happened.
I remember the look, because for the longest time I had the pictures of it on my blog. I had like this specific theme. Remember Tumblr themes, everybody? I do. I had this specific theme where you would use pictures as links. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is home. This is my ass box.
Yes. And this was one of your links. She looked classic. It was like a nice drapey cream dress. It was cute.
She served it.
She didn't do much there. I think she was actually a guest of someone else. Like, I don't think she was invited. She like went with
a
designer.
She was a plus one.
She actually, yeah, she was legitimate. I think the first time she was actually invited herself to the Met was 2014. I think that was the first time she went by herself.
Really? Maybe
all the other times she was a plus one. But so June 13th, she does her 13-hour meet and greet. And apparently she doesn't sit down or stop. She just keeps going for the 13 hours.
Which is actually fairly impressive. I mean, I personally believe that she at one point took a seat at some fucking point. Like, because...
Yes, I think that she had a bite of a sandwich and a sip of water and, you know, collected herself.
Right, exactly. And that's not... Who would be offended if she did that? Nobody. Like, nobody's getting... She's going to meet everybody that she can, no matter what. But, you know, back in the day, I thought that this was like, whoa, that's so much work. That's so crazy that she did that. 13 hours? That's insane. That's like, meanwhile, now that I have like a job and I'm a person, I've worked so many 13-hour shifts at this point that I honestly think that what she did was like, so, I mean, in terms of the, you know, the industry that she's in, like, wow. But like, in terms of being a person that has a job, it's not that impressive.
If there's anything that's impressive, it's that she had so much social interaction. I would hate to meet that many people.
She did it for the fans. That's the thing that's impressive about it. Not the amount of time. Not that she never sat down, which by the way, I'm sure that she did.
This is a rumor that the Taylor team themselves have propagated, like, by the way.
We did not have a stool behind a curtain where she could sit. We did not, as God is my witness.
She was whipped, and she was told to meet every single person and put a smile on that fucking rat face.
Yeah, that was the 13-hour meet and greet. Didn't she also do that performance of Mine, like in the little tent, and she invited fans in the yellow dress?
Yes, but that was a secret. That was a secret because Mine hadn't come out.
It was a secret fan event, and then I remember people came onto Tumblr.com and were like, I just heard the new Taylor Swift song, and I can't really talk about it, but it was so amazing, it was all on the CMA Fest when it airs in 2 months. It's
like, yeah, this was like the early iteration of Secret Sessions.
Yeah, really, and this was the very early iteration of the quote unquote special treatment of fans. Fans who had met her before, a couple of which I knew on a personal level, because back then I was still like in sort of like in their circle of Taylor fans, and still never got fucking invited to anything, so all the good it did me. But I knew a couple of people, and they were just like getting absolutely attacked because they had met Taylor before.
Do you also remember that around this time, it was like a thing that if you wanted to get invited to a secret event, you would sign up on her website and like put in where you lived and your email and stuff. Yep. There was like a specific place. There was a specific thing that you could sign up for that everyone said was how they found people. I did that a million times.
I believe in my heart that that was just their mailing list for buying merch.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
It was nice to have a dream back then. It really was.
It was nice to have a direct action that you could take.
Yeah, you know, instead of just being like, you know, flash forward to 2014. Here's me reblogging the same post 1,600 times because Taylor logged on for 10 seconds.
Oh my god, I've been dragged. I've been dragged.
I did it too. I did it too. God, it was so humiliating.
It was pathetic.
I felt like the most base rat in the sewers doing it. I hated doing it. And I would say that, and every single time I'd be like, listen, I hate doing this, but can you please reblog this?
That was the early iteration of the secret sessions, the events, the special treatment, the drama that continues on to this fucking day. But June 21st, 2010, Half of My Heart with John Mayer comes out. He had previously tweeted that he woke up from a dream and he had written a song in his dream called Half of My Heart. And he said, I want to sing it with Taylor Swift. She would make a killer Stevie Nicks in contrast to my Tom
Petty.
And he tweeted that in 2009. And she said, oh.
But here's the thing of it, is that he's talking about Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks. And have you heard Half of My Heart? That is an insult to Tom Petty and to also Stevie Nicks.
Half of My Heart is nothing. It's like two is better than one. I really just don't think that it's a good song.
And I only know one lyric from that song, which is, I can't keep loving you, because that is the one that Taylor sings by herself. Does she sing again other than that?
No, she's basically just doing, the reason why this isn't interesting is because she's doing backing vocals and she has no writing credit on the song. So he literally just pulled her into the studio and was like, will you like do some harmonies with me and sing one line? She was like, okay.
God, that really makes you fucking
like
think.
Highway Don't Care.
I hate that fucking song.
Like when this song comes out, this is when everything goes wrong with her and John Mayer. Like it ends very abruptly because the album is almost done. So I think that Dear John was a pretty late addition, but it happened, I would say, in the summer.
Yeah, time. I think so.
Like she wrote that song around then. But yeah, so July 20th, 2010, Taylor has a Ustream video chat. Best day of my life.
It was literally the hype that was had from this fucking live chat. Excuse me. She like actually answered fan questions. But the thing that pissed me off, okay, this is the one thing that got me about this live stream. Here's what I wanted to know. The name of the album, when the album's coming out, any number of songs that you can tell me. Is there going to be pre-releases? When's the tour going to start? This is what I wanted to know. And she would answer those questions, some of them, that she felt comfortable answering. But then she would answer questions like, what's your favorite animal? And shit like that. Like, bitch,
what's your point. What's your go-to outfit? Yeah. What's your go-to outfit right now? What's your favorite Starbucks drink? I'm like, I don't care, girl.
Is Starbucks Fly going to be on the album? Well, you know, I personally...
And she said it was. She did say.
She did. And I wept because... And you guys...
That was the best day ever.
If you hadn't been a fan at this point, if you hadn't been listening to the shitty live version of Sparks Fly...
Horrible recording.
From Steve from DBT.com. If you didn't have that song, if you weren't there, you do not know how fucking much people wanted this song to be on Speak Now. You have no...
We all wanted this so bad.
When she said it was going to be on the fucking album,
I screamed.
Lost my shit. I was crying so hard. I like missed it. I like missed the entire moment. She just said, it's going to be on the album. And what she said after that, I couldn't fucking tell you.
God.
It was fucking incredible.
I remember that she had announced the album was called Speak Now. She announced it was coming out on October 25th. She also announced that Mine was the first single and it was coming out August 24th. But all I cared about was the Sparks
Fly
was going to be
more
on the album.
To me than any other information was just getting Sparks Fly. I mean, she served us. We don't get stuff like that anymore.
Yes, she
where
did.
She's doing. I mean,
no,
we.
She doesn't listen
no,
to us like that.
No, she doesn't. But I thank God every day that Sparks Fly
that she listened. It. I think genuinely, this was our first triumph in irritating her really,
yep.
really
and
hard
our
to
second,
do something.
Or somebody's second big triumph. It wasn't personally mine, if I'm being honest with you. But somebody's second big triumph was getting her to play All Too Well on the Grammy. Would I have
yeah.
rather
I mean,
heard another song? Yeah. Was that performance an absolute slap? Yes. But, you know. Apples and oranges.
It was to be fair, it was really exciting when I saw the Instagram video of her playing the piano for All Too Well. I was like, wow, she's actually listening to us. That's
to
what was
you,
really cool because this was before she was really accessible. She announces Mine as the first single and she talks about how the song is about her tendency to run from love because she says every direct example of love in her life has ended in goodbye. And really think about that because her parents. That's all I'm saying. Just think about that because of her parents.
Yeah, and I actually remember that being a topic of conversation at the time. I think that so there was somebody brought it up with Speak Now that her parents were on the rocks, and I remember everybody being like, how the fuck would you know that? And then when Red was coming
out, but it was true.
When Red was coming out, everybody said that, you know, because she said, oh, this album is really going to be mostly about this one big heartbreak I had. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what she had, this earth-shattering heartbreak, blah, blah. And somebody was like, it's not even about a boy. It's about her parents breaking up. It's about her parents.
Shut up.
She's like, can you imagine having an entire album that's just about how her parents got divorced? She's like an adult out of the house, and she's writing an entire album about her parents getting divorced.
It's literally like what an acoustic song that's like, oh no, my mom is cool but my dad's a Republican. Like that is the whole song.
Sounds good. Sounds really good.
So we're all absolutely perched, we're waiting for Sparks Fly. Honestly, I was way more excited about this than the new single. Genuinely, I was like, okay, the new single's gonna slap, but I know that Sparks Fly is gonna send
yep,
me
it's
over
gonna
the
send
edge.
Me directly into heaven.
August 4th, 2010, 2 weeks before Mine is supposed to come out, it is leaked. It is
yeah,
leaked.
And I downloaded that shit ASAP.
Oh
fuck yeah!
I pressed Dude, download, and I was like,
I was like listening to it as I was reading that, like her, like talking about how she like cried when she heard that it leaked. I was like,
yes.
Oh bitch, I'm jamming. Everybody here is still gonna
yeah.
buy the single, just so you know. But I'm jamming. Didn't she push the release of it ahead?
She pushed it ahead by 10 days. This is where her paranoia surrounding leaks originates. So she said, a leak is so out of my comfort zone, but it ended up good in the end. It made me so emotional that I started crying. She was trying to guilt us into
well,
not listening
you
to
know
it. That's
what
she was trying to do.
And it worked for some people because ever since that time that she said that, people have been using the defense, not that it's wrong to listen to leaks because of illegality.
It makes her
it
upset.
It really hurts Taylor's feelings because you're listening to Blank Space 2 days before the album comes out. Well, I'm not strong.
I can't do yeah. it. So Mine leaks, and I remember hearing Mine and being like, oh my God, this slaps.
Yeah, I think it was probably... It's the best first single of all time, and it shatters my brain that it performs so I won't say poorly, but it did not perform great as compared to, for example, Love Story, and then later on We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. I mean, Jesus Christ, it never had a chance compared to
yeah.
that song.
No,
but it's
it
just
didn't.
Like, it makes me sad because I'm like, this fucking slaps. It at least should have been number one for like months on country. I don't understand why it wasn't.
The country radio kind of starts to turn a little bit of a blind eye to her singles at this
yeah,
stage.
And I guess you could make the very, very strong statement that Mine is in no way, shape, or form a country song.
You could definitely say that. But what about the U.S. version? The country version with the slide guitar? That fucking slops harder than the
oh
radio
my God,
single
I fucking
that we got
hate
with that boring-ass acoustic
the radio
guitar.
Fucking single. I also hate the one, it's the
hate
pop
it.
Version. Have you heard that one where it goes, bam, bam,
that sucks.
Bam.
I hate that
piece of shit.
I hate that shit.
It makes me so mad.
I mean, the original version with the slide guitar was amazing, but because that leaked, I think they rushed to change it for radio, and they changed it to that awful, like, the radio version is that horrible like acoustic guitar strumming. I don't know what it is, but the slide guitar went off. It was went so
all
good.
The fucking way off.
But yeah, so it got really good reception from critics. I mean, there is that one line that does make me question. You say we'll never make my parents' mistakes. That does.
Well, okay. So the thing about that line is that I sometimes feel like there are certain lines that are in songs that are not necessarily 100% factual to her actual life. They just work in the song. They work with the idea she's going for. Personally, I don't think that mine, people speculated it was about Cory Monteith, but there's no source to who this fucking song is about. It could just be...
No, there isn't. I was trying to think. I was really trying to rack my brain being like, who is mine about? I think it's like Mary's song in the fact that it's a story. Like, it's not really about her and
it reminds me a lot of The Only Exception by Paramore, which came out in the year before, or in the year leading up to Speak Now being out, and she's a known Paramore stan. So I think that she got inspiration from that song, and I don't necessarily know that specific lyric about her parents, like, you know, having mistakes and fucking up, and her being made a rebel by her
that is the line that got me. It was like, you made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter. Amazing line, first of all. The way she just throws it off. Wow. Taylor, are you a rebel? At this time, I would say no.
I would absolutely say 100% no. She, and I would even say no to on Reputation. You know what I mean?
She's not a rebel. That's just, it's not in her DNA.
But she never quite makes it all the way now, does she?
So it debuts on the Hot 100 and peaks at number 3, which is good for a song that isn't radio friendly. If you think about it, this wasn't a radio friendly song at the time. This is when like Teenage Dream was really popular. It was long. It didn't have the chorus kind of changed a lot throughout the song. It didn't have like a hooky hook.
But that honestly can be said for pretty much every goddamn song on Speak Now, which is why it was a fucking slap ass of an album.
Because it was an album, not radio singles and a few other good songs.
Goddamn album. I can't even get into it. I'm getting emotional.
Mine got critical praise. The critics really liked this one because also it was like, this was a very slight maturing in her songwriting, as in like, there are little hints that she has experienced something closer to an adult relationship. Drawer of My Things at Your Place. Yeah. You know? But that bills one lyric pay. Also, yeah, that one I was like, we got bills to pay. I'm like, girl, like, when you have you ever you struggled to pay your bills?
You don't even have to fucking try to pay your bills. It just happens. You have automatic.
Yes. You have direct debit for all your bills. Yeah. And then she goes back to Maine for a half hour special where she premieres the video. And fun fact, George Bush attended this and brought his grandchildren.
This is why I feel like I knew that. And I feel like popular opinion on Tumblr.com was get them out. We want them out. But then also on the other side, people were talking about how George W. Bush went to fucking, or was it George Bush Senior?
Maine.
Was it Senior?
No, it was George. It was George.
It was
W. Bush,
it was fucking
sure.
W was at the fucking thing, and people were like, "This is proof that she is a Republican." It's like, well, is
oh
it,
yes, I forgot it, that they
if
were.
Donald Trump walks into the Dunkin' Donuts that I happen to work at. Does that make me a Republican because he likes donuts and I sell donuts? No.
Her political views were very, very quiet at this time. But I personally think there's always been evidence to suggest that she's a Democrat, personally. And now we know that it's confirmed.
Yeah. All right, Swifties, we're going to stop this one here and pick up where we left off in 2010 Part 2, starting with the Mine music video premiere. We will be getting into another soured relationship that Taylor had in 2010. The Speak Now promo, going through the entire album, and then also discussing some very sad candidates that we got at the end of the year. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to follow us on Spotify and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. We very much look forward to hearing your thoughts on this current episode. You can keep in touch with us on Twitter at @TSwiftPodcast, and we will see you soon. If you think John Mayer is evil, please make sure to give us 5 stars on the App Store or wherever it is that you rate podcasts. Okay, bye.